bells me.
What the fuck's the matter with these cunts? What's the matter with them? That must be on some fucking mega ego trip, these guys.
We got horses and bloody ducks.
The whole part of being a rock star is being a rock star. And what the rock stars do, you get a limo, you get a Learjet, you got people running around licking your ass.
I get nicknamed Nibby.
I looked at Bill Ward and he had this big long beard. And I said, you look like a pen nib. A stone.
Hello, I'm Ozzy.
It's very strange. And Geezer in particular had all sorts of weird dreams and weird thoughts. And it might have been the acid, I don't know. Blah, 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 blah.
Welcome to Sabbath Bloody Podcast, a sabography for the masses here. Today, we're going on to technical ecstasy here. Tech X, boys and girls. Yes, there's no doubt this is widely regarded as the bottom of the pack when it comes to classic Aussie Led Sabbath, but one of them has to be, right? And I'll agree, by comparison to what preceded it, it might miss the mark more than it hits it, but this journey into the void that we're doing here, you know, me going through all this stuff, revisiting, and really hearing some tracks for the first time ever. I'm not trying to fool you guys. I was, or have been, just a strictly first couple albums Aussie guy. I didn't reject the stuff, but that's the stuff that I listened to when I did go to my Sabbath. And I'm actually more of an Aussie solo guy. Like, that's where my bridge was, like, in the 2000s. And anyway, I kind of missed some of this stuff, the Twilight Aussie shit, and I actually love this now. Like, there's kind of like a pop music sensibility that really creeps in here. It's very of its time, you know. They're trying new things here. Some people might say they're trying to do stuff that's more what their contemporaries are doing, whereas the earlier stuff was kind of unique to them. But even the earlier stuff, it's all rooted in the blues, and they just did their spin on it. This is kind of their spin on that poppy, kind of proggy, classic rock, Foreigner, yes, you know, that kind of stuff. Even Queen. I find that this is kind of their take on what Queen was doing with some of these tracks on here. But they're trying new things, people. So you have those first six albums. They will always be there for you. So don't shit on this offering just because they were moving on from that. Because they're human beings, man. I mean, you can shit on Rock and Roll Doctor, but that's a different story. We'll get to that. This is also, despite his reputation as the doom riff lord, this is actually a true Tony Iommi-led Sabbath offering if you dig into what's going on. And it's an interesting album, too, so stick around. Anyway, let's see what happened between Sabotage and the beginning of this record here, because there's a bit of a leap. If we were just to hit play, you know, go straight from the Writ right into Backstreet Kids here, that's for sure. That would be a bit of a jump. But so, with their ties to Patrick Meehan Jr. severed at this point, they had been starting anew after all the acid and venom was purged from their system on Sabotage there. Let's see how the boys kick off and tour Sabotage on their own, you know, managing themselves. Let's jump on that lovely caravan to kick this baby off.
It is a funny story. I think those stories are kind of best in the caravan.
So, the band trusted no one at this point. The touring schedule got pretty light, actually, mostly because of court dates, I assume. And their road managers and shit, they kind of became their managers more than anything. I know around this time, they enlisted another Birmingham lad, entered during the Tech X tour as tour manager. He knew Iommi from his childhood. That's Paul Clark, and he's essentially like the band's tour manager in the wake of the Meehan fiasco. And other road crew at the time, like Mark Forrester, Norman Perry, Graham Wright, and David Tongay, who have a great book called How Black Was Our Sabbath. That's where I gathered a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff for this technical ecstasy tour, because they do talk about that, kind of the band blowing up at that point, blowing up in a bad way. The personal relations get kind of strained on these next two albums. And, the Ardens are still involved, obviously, funding the operations heading into Technical Ecstasy. But Sabbath, when they get things rolling again proper, they hit the U.S. even harder than before. There are very few, like, Sabotage-era recordings out there. And the ones that are out there, and bootlegs and such, like, they're fucking phenomenal. Great set lists. Hole in the Sky usually appears as an opener, which is really cool. And the supporting acts get interesting too for the next few tours. Like, you can definitely see that there's more popular American bands playing with them. They play with Kiss a few times at the beginning of the tour, and that must be where they kind of steal some of those vibes for some of the lyrics for today's album. Definitely some Gene Simmons style stuff. But our typical set list in the what we call the Sabotage tour, Hole in the Sky is a new opener. I think by that point too they would have had Superzar as like the tape plan, so that crescendos into and then they do some Volume 4 Love. They do a pairing. They do Snowblind and Tomorrow's Dream. And I really like, I know Snowblind is like a popular song, but like it's even clicked with me even more just how cool it is. And Snowblind at that point, they even had like a live gimmick of like fake snow falling during the song. So that was a centerpiece of the live show. There's a few funny stories that I've read about. They had like a snow machine that was in the rafters, and sometimes it would break down, or it broke down a couple times, and the roadies had to climb up there and manually dump the fake snow down on Ozzy. And there's a story in the book that I mentioned earlier, How Black Was Our Sabbath. And one time, your man, who was up there with the whole bag, he dropped it right onto Ozzy, causing them to like stop the show. They mentioned that the crew were like bootlegging illegal moonshine in the fake snow crates, taking it back to the UK. If you want to read more great like road crew stories, that kind of stuff, check out the book How Black Was Our Sabbath, written by David Tangay and Graham Wright, who are two of Sabbath's old school posse. And like I said, with their Meehan management not being there, the management kind of fell on the road crew and they became more of a posse. So Tangay and Wright in this era are pretty much like road managers, along with Paul Clark. He's a Birmingham lad as well. Like, a real tight posse here for the Tech X tour. That's kind of the management, is just the boys and their boys. So Sabbath at the top of the tree this time. Well, let's be honest, Arden's money is still at the very top. But I should finish the rest of the typical set list here for the Sabotage tour. I get sidetracked really easily. Sorry, I get sidetracked really easily. So, Hole in the Sky, Snowblind, Symptom of the Universe, War Pigs, Megalomania, which is a surprise to me that they played that live so much, given its length, but it's great that they got Doomy like that. Then your usual guitar and drum jams leading into Supernaut. Supernaut is commonly just played as like a riff, partially live, which is disappointing. That song should always be played in its entirety. Badass, funky jam. And then you get Iron Man, early version of the track from Tech X, which is, unfortunately, Rock and Roll Doctor is the one they use to, I guess, tease the album, which is not the greatest one. But they also play some other classics here. Sometimes they play Spiral Architect, which is really cool to see. I'd love to find like a real quality recording of them doing Spiral live, if anybody's got it out there. But they play the staples, you know. They close with the encore, Children of the Grave into Paranoid for the last one. Those are just like live locks at this point. I gotta flag a couple of dates on the tour here though, because there are some with some of my favorite bands at this time too, like playing festival gigs that they play with Lynyrd Skynyrd, which is cool, in the 70s. Skynyrd was awesome. At the Madura Speedway in Fresno, September 1st there. And you got Faces, Rod Stewart's band there. Fleetwood Mac, like some big 70s popular rock acts. Peter Frampton's on a bill, like, yeah. They play all the festivals, the Starlight Festival in San Bernardino. California had it going on then, and they were right into that scene, starting with Cal Jam and anything that fell after that. Sabbath would try to jump on, it seems. They do a few makeup gigs in January of 1976, too, for some of those stuff that got canceled in 75. As always, there's cancellations with Sabbath, but the last one being the iconic Hammersmith Odeon in London. So here's some quotes from Ozzy on that show, where he kind of sets the beginning of the end of that hardcore drugging era. At least that's how he presents it, but we all know they continued to drug well into the Dio era and possibly beyond. We'll see when we dive in here. But Ozzy says in his book, we said, look, we need to put this fucking drug thing behind us. It's fucking us up. When we started, all we had was a couple of beers and smoked some wanga, and that's all we needed. Now we've got this fucking powder everywhere, and everybody's fucking talking their mouths off and talking bullshit. Let's stop the coke, we said. So we got a gig at Hammersmith Odeon, and I'm thinking, fucking hell, how am I gonna get on after that gig? Because after the gig, It was like your sugar lump at the end of the race, a snort of coke. So we go on the stage. I'm all depressed because I know there's no blow about, and they're playing Hole in the Sky. The band are playing like fucking demons, you know. And I'm going, you know what? I'm all right. Even without the coke, we don't need this shit. But the second song hits, and it starts to slow down. All the music comes to a stop. The third song, it's like he droned to a low tail off riff, and I'm going, what the fuck's going on? And then I look at them, and they're all rubbing their nose, starry eyes. Before they went on, they had all done a couple of lines, and like a cunt, I had not had any. So poor Ozzy's not flying high again that night. And that's the last Sabotage kind of cycle gig. Certainly not the last time Ozzy does drugs, that's for sure. It's kind of sad though, the way things start to break down here. Like the drug and booze are at the heart of it all earlier, but the managerial stuff doesn't stop. And then when they're kind of freed from that managerial thing, the drugs kind of take over as the dominating force that's kind of fucking with their inner personalities. With Ozzy and Bill kind of wanting to keep things bluesy and boozy, more dark, you know, and then Tony pushing more towards that proggy, upbeat, complex arrangements, coked out, you know. And then Geese, he's kind of always the glue, right? As far as moving shit forward, he kind of bridges both camps between Tony and Ozzy and Bill, working on lyrics to suit both Tony's new prog direction and then Ozzy's weariness to change. Some brilliant moments in the next two albums, actually, from Geezer, bass-wise, too. But, yeah, it should be noted that even before they started working on Technical Ecstasy, things were breaking down between Ozzy and Tony in particular. And it's not until the summer of 76 that they decide to work on the album, which we are covering today. So let's get off of the road and let's get into the studio. With their contract dictating that a new record is due, the Don Arden team, they encouraged the lads to find a US option for a studio, mostly in order to avoid some of the British taxations that were being placed on the band. Don was more on the ball with like that kind of stuff, like evading the IRS, maxing out their cash flow, which is good for them at this point because they were still pretty crippled by all the writs and shit that went on with Meehan. And they'd become kind of tax exiles at this point too. And where do all the exiles flock to in America? Well, the Sunshine State, of course. They book into Miami's Criterion Studios in June. And this studio looks very Miami in pictures, like palm trees outside, white everything, and, you know, a lot of white drifting in through the door, I imagine, if you know what I mean. And apparently they worked nights there because of the heat, and during the daytime they would keep themselves entertained at the beach, soaking in the sun, at the Thunderbird Hotel. This is apparently their haunt in Miami, at least Ozzy and Nibby. Although Bill didn't really dig the sun, so he'd stay at like the Thunderbirds like bar there, drinking in the shade, get absolutely legless. Apparently he was hard to wrangle in the studio around this time. But the studio itself, that's where Tony was all business. And like I said, this is really his album. He spends most of the time in Criterion Studio working on this magnum opus that we get, Technical Ecstasy. And a lot of big names made some big hits at Criterion Studios over the years, right up to present day, actually. Like, most notably, Clapton's Layla and all that stuff. That was done there. I'm not a big Clapton fan, obviously, but the outro to Layla is pretty epic, right? Isn't that Duane Allman? That whole, you know, wind down. Very druggy. Awesome. And the Eagles were in there. They were actually recording Hotel California at the same time that Sabbath was doing Technical Ecstasy. And there's talk that they told Sabbath to turn down at some point, you know, that old back and forth thing they always do with those bands. But anyway, so Tony, again, like on Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, he was kind of expected to kind of come up with the whole thing, or he took the reins, I think, more than anything, because he takes things in a different direction here. He partners up with a keyboard player by the name of Gerald Jez Woodorf, who joins on, and Jez and Tony really drive this fucking album. So let's read a little bit from Tony's book here, talking about that collaboration and the studio vibe for this album. Like I said, this is a very Iommi-driven album, despite the lack of doomy riffage. So all you Iommi worshippers, if you really truly like the way this man progresses his career, this is an important album to pay attention to, because he does some really cool stuff composition-wise on this record. So, Iommi says in his book, when we wrote the songs for what would become Technical Ecstasy, Gerald Woodorf was a great help to me because now I had somebody I could try out ideas with. The band didn't get up until something like 2 p.m., so I often went into our rehearsal room earlier to run over some ideas with Gerald. It was good to have somebody along who could play the chords as well as play the solos. There were keyboards on all of the tracks, which was a bit different for us. I liked it, but Technical Ecstasy didn't sell as many as the previous albums. Sabotage hadn't broken any sales records either, but with this one, the decline really started. It was especially disappointing for me because I was really involved with the album from start to finish. But it was just one of those things. It was 1976 and it was the time of punk, and there was a whole new generation of kids. So, there you go. Confirmed by Iommi himself. This is his solo offering under the Sabbath banner. It's Technical Ecstasy featuring Tony Iommi. In the past, for keys on Sabbath albums, outside of Rick Wakeman's contributions on Sabbath Bloody Sabbath back there, it's been Tony and sometimes Geezer fucking around on a Mellotron. Even Ozzy did some stuff here and there. Who Are You on Sabbath Bloody Sabbath. But for this album, and the subsequent touring too, Jez becomes a member of the band, a silent member that they hide off stage, but a huge part of their sound, especially on the tracks from this album. Like, Jez is another Brummy lad too, so he fits in with the other four. Geezer even used him on some of his solo projects in the 80s later. But as you'll hear, when you spin Tech X, the keys are very prominent as far as driving like the composition of the album. So a lot of supernauts were pissed about this, and they checked out for that reason. Which I can respect. Yes, it's not what... If you're a master of reality, strictly master of reality cat, or, you know, you dig Paranoid and all that stuff, this is a bit of a departure, but I like it because it is a departure. And by this point in their career, they should probably, you know, try some new things. Jez is a bit more of like a proggy player, kind of showy at times. I kind of prefer what the guys like Adam Wakeman and Jeff Nichols do later on as far as the live stuff. But Jez works on the album and really creates this with Tony. Also, Bill's work on Tech X is very different from his more freestyle blues that we got on the first six albums. He kind of locks more into a simple beat, and it still has nibby flourishes here and there, but on Tech X, his space and vibe and just playing what needs to be played as opposed to, like, you know, being a percussionist and adding flourishes like he does usually, what he excels at. It's cool. It's something different. From this point forward, Bill Ward's, the magic of Bill Ward that I love and a lot of people love, he kind of stifles that a little bit. So take that as you will, but he still fucking serves the songs right. So let's get into those songs, because the power of the riff doth still compelleth
the power of the riff compels me.
Won't you listen?
Track one, well, it finally happened, people, because Sabbath, in my opinion, drops the ball here on the opening track. I mean, look, you had Black Sabbath as the career opener, Untouchable, self-titled, debut, you know, the band, the album, the song, all at once. Then I think they even topped that, right, with War Pigs. You can't deny War Pigs. Then Master of Reality gets Sweet Leaf, which is really cool, defining their stoner rock with a bang there. Or cough, I guess. And then my favorite openers, like Wheels of Confusion, love that track. And then on Sabbath Bloody Sabbath, they open with Sabbath Bloody Sabbath, which is an absolute leviathan of a song. Hole in the Motherfucking Sky, last month's episode. So, so far, so good, right? But on Tech X, we get one of the most generic songs in their catalog, unfortunately. Backstreet Kids. From the riff to lyrics, the lyrics especially on this track are really bland. I don't mind the music as much, but it's been said that by this point Geezer was getting sick of being the go-to for dark lyrics, and he really changed it up considerably here, making more accessible themes on purpose, like rock and roll, dirty women, that kind of shit. So I get that he doesn't want to write NIB over and over again, but Backstreet Kids and Rock and Roll Doctor, these are like phone-in songs. In my opinion. But anyway, let's look at the words here. Let's have a look. I do find, like, I get caught in my own opinions a little bit when I do these track by tracks. But that's what this part of the show is about. You know, let's read some of the lyrics here. See if you find him as cringeworthy as me. I'm just another backstreet kid. Rock and roll music's the only thing I ever really dig. Can't stop the music going around inside my head. I'm a rock and roll soldier. Gonna play it until I'm dead. Brother. The second verse is a little better. They do reference one of their oldies here. At least, kind of. Sitting in the back of a shiny limousine. Living in a taxi. Can't remember where I've been. Playing my music. Sitting in my hotel. Writing about the stars and thinking about the hand of doom. Is that a self-aware lyric there? I don't know. Certainly not a rhyme. Oh, no, it is. Yeah. Hotel room, hand of doom. It's just the way I'm reading it. I'm missing all the melody. That's kind of cool, though, if that's the intention of that lyric, to be a bit of a callback. Maybe they're saying that there's still those kids that they were 7 or so years ago. They're just trying something different. Or am I giving it too much credit here? I want to like these lyrics, Geezer. I really do. But even he has admitted that he was purposely trying to make these accessible and different from what he was doing. And the song here is crap to me. It's kind of like Kiss. I don't know. Disposable. Anyway, let's go on to the album that I think should have actually opened this record. Would have been way more effective. Let's play the riff, sort it out proper. This is You Won't Change Me, as performed by our resident riff lord, Ben. Today when it comes to cool doomy riffs, this song has the best riff on the album, hands down, so we'll give that the honors for today.
Power of the riff compels me,
and it just feels better, right? Let's erase the Backstreet Kids from our memory now. This feels different enough that you can still say like that they're moving forward here. It's kind of got a bit more psychedelic gothy doom in it, almost like a cathedral or the stuff that happens, you know, that spawns off of Sabbath, the 90s doom revival that happened. And the actual track has some heavy keys on the verses. Like I say, very gothic, kind of. So Swedish doom. And Ozzy has like a reverb-soaked effect on his vocals, which becomes his trademark moving forward, really from this point, because like the other tracks are kind of raw. There is some reverb, obviously, throughout the years, but this is when you really notice them augmenting his voice. But still, Ozzy sounds great on this album, I think. Amazing track, too. You Can't Change Me. And the only beef that I would have with it, really, is Tony's lead work doesn't really do anything for me on it. Feels kind of wacky, kind of stuck in a jam band kind of thing, as far as those high, bendy solos. Some showy kind of licks that don't go anywhere. And, like, these songs are more composition-driven, so it just feels like a little Coke explosion. But that's all right. That's what they're doing, right? From Sabbath Bloody Sabbath up until now, I really, like, Iommi's lead work kind of goes scrambly. Like, he's swinging a cat till it screeches, and he hits the mark every once in a while, but it's not as structured, and he loses a bit of the dynamics in soloing, because I think he's kind of, like, you know, feeding off of what's popular at that time. That's when Van Halen got big and all that stuff. So the theatrics of the lead guitar were more things as opposed to the dynamics that he was the king of in those early albums. He kind of finds a good medium, I find, moving forward. And some of the Dio stuff I have dived into so far, his lead work really improves at that point. But as far as Technical Ecstasy, Never Say Die, that would just be one of my gripes. But anyway, let's move on, because it's all right. We got Bill Ward's Beth here. Nibby's got some soulful pipes on this one, too. And there's a cool live performance of this on YouTube that I'd say go watch to experience the poppy glory that is baked into this track, because it is a pop kind of thing. Bill grooving like Stevie Wonder back there. Kind of douchey, I guess, but it's fucking great that Bill gets a little cut on this album, though. So I love Bill Ward. Anything he does, I still love him. And I like this track a lot, too. If you recall from the very first, like, pre-Sabbath episode that I've done of Sabbath Buddy podcast way back in the day. Bill was the lead singer for the band that him and Tony were in at the start. They were called, what were they? Not Mythology. The Rest. That's what they were called. But Bill has gone silent since Earth formed and all that. I think he has a great voice too. And the piano on this track is cool, which I believe is Bill as well. Could be wrong on that, but some new vibes here for Sabbath anyway. This is just a solid pop ballad. Much better than Changes, in my opinion. I just don't like the melodies and Changes. I know Ozzy loves this song as well. It's all right. And they go into a big epic right after it, so it's almost like the instrumental for the album. The next one here, crafted by Iommi and Jez, of course. This is a rock opera, Gypsy. Now this one's really grown on me. There's all kinds of stuff to find in here. At first, I thought it kind of overstayed its welcome because it was like this fucking Bohemian Rhapsody kind of Queen vibe thing. But I kind of appreciate Queen now, as of late. I know that there's a new movie coming out about Freddie Mercury and all that shit. So I'm sure Queen's going to see a resurgence, but you got to be open to this. You got to be in the right mood to listen to this thing. It can't all be like, you know, thrashy 200 kilometers per hour kind of dynamics. You know, there's some really amazing lifts here. Ozzy's vocals are great. I like what Jez does on the keyboard, actually, in Gypsy. And, I got nothing to really say about it. There's not much, like, behind-the-scenes stuff on the tracks at this point, or at least in the books that I have. I need to track down some more books, so it's not just me giving my opinions on the tracks, which, I don't know. Is it working for you guys? You must like hearing this. I mean, it must incite something in you. And if it does, hit me up on Twitter there, at SabbathBloodyPC. Tell me that, you know, Gypsy is shit. But I like it. And then after that, they go into a stomper here. And I'll play Ben's riff. Sounds like Give Me Back My Bullets here. Some kind of Skinnerd Almond Brother kind of jam. I don't know. That's what I hear. But this is all moving parts stand still to keep things moving here. The theme on this one is sadism, megalomania, alcoholism, some cross-dressing in there. You know, all that good shit. Basically politics nowadays. Geezer's bass is fucking cranked in this. I love it. Him and Nibby kind of get lost in some of the other tracks on this album, but he's doing a straight ahead groove and it really works here. This album could really use a proper like remix as opposed to remaster. I do find that like track to track, you're not getting the same vibes. And mostly it's with Bill Ward and Geezer, their stuff kind of gets lost in the barrage of higher register stuff that Iommi and Jez are doing. But anyway, let's talk about the lyrics here. Like I said, this is one to kind of try to make some sense of. It's like a drag queen president character that Ozzy's on about here. So he says, super animation turning on the nation. Beastie Boys always on vacation. It's getting kind of rappy, isn't it? Some hip hop coming in. So it says, and they say all moving parts stand still. Since he was elected, adrenaline injected. Hear him say all moving parts should kill. Just like the hero, he's got them all on the run. So, kind of a dictator coming to power here, I think. Abusive power, is that what they're showing off here? Since he passed the motion, they're building in the ocean, and he's saying all men should be free. What a combination, peace and radiation, and he's saying all men should fight for me. So, more of the same. He's drilling for oil, building weapons. Just like his mama, he seems to get pleasure from pain and the rain. Ain't it strange? Very strange. I don't get that lyric, but apparently your man has mommy issues too. I like choking toys. This is a good lyric. I like choking toys. This is the breakdown. I like choking toys. You gotta see me before you see the boys. Teachers burnt the school. He's had enough of sticking to the rules. So a little temper tantrum here. People stop and see he's gotta be more decadent than me. Just to pass the time, he gets his kicks from licking off the wine. Pretty silly ladies, all Cynthia's and Sadie's. Call him and he takes their numbers down. Says he is a woman. Should have seen it coming. And she says she's married to a clown. Just like a lady, she'll keep you guessing through the night. Okay, so some of the narrative gets a little scrambled here, I think. But I don't know. It seems like it's like a fucking megalomaniac kind of Donald Trump dude appealing to the masses and gets in, switches up things, goes to war, and switches his gender. Because why the fuck not? I don't know. I guess the concept is you can't trust politicians. That's what I can get from it anyway. But anyway, it's a fun song. I like All Moving Parts Stand Still. It's cool live too. And it's followed by a not so fun song. Or I guess it would be fun if it was a Poison song or something, but not Sabbath. Let's check in with the Rock and Roll Doctor. Not a fan of this jam. It's kind of the sister song to Backstreet Kids. I like Backstreet Kids a little bit more. I guess the riff in this one's a little cooler. It's a dirtier rock. You can hear it there in Ben's playing, which sounds awesome, by the way. But hey, I'm all for Sabbath trying new things, but this track doesn't do anything for me. And unfortunately, it's one of the tracks that they really push from this album in the live sets. It's just sad how blatantly they were chasing radio rock with this one, as far as what I can see from it. But we won't dwell on it. Rock and Roll Doctor is what it is. Product of its time. Some party rock. The next track is cool, though. We get She's Gone. Very ballady one here, actually. But one of the few non-instrumental ballads that Black Sabbath does, and Ozzy shines on this one. I love his singing on a very classical kind of track here. Geezer has a cool little chill bass line behind the wall of strings that Tony and Jez come up with. And like I said, the orchestral arrangements and the mature kind of themes that Geezer's dealing with here, it's kind of loss and suffering. Almost feels like an early version of like Revolution Mother Earth, that Ozzy solo song, which is great. It's cool stuff. So let's just get to the closer two on the album here, which is much more of a rocker when they pair it back and forth. This is the one that kind of became the famous, or not famous, but the more Sabbath song that they kept driving into the live sets right up to the end tour. And that is Dirty Women, which is a great closer. Don't you play your games with me. No, not Evil Woman. It's Dirty Woman. And it's a great guitar song here. I mean, just some great riff evolution within the song. It's fantastic. Geezer apparently wrote this one about all the hookers that he was seeing outside of Criterion Studios in Miami while they were cutting the album. So it's one of the fresher ones going into the studio, I believe. And yeah, it closes out the album very nicely. So there you go, that's Technical Ecstasy. I guess what really hurts Technical Ecstasy for me is the sequencing of the tracks, other than the closer, but more the opener. I like Dirty Woman as the closer, but the opener should have been You Don't Change Me. And their single choices on it, not so hot. I mean, it's all right. it's all right. It's just not very Sabbath, but that's what they were trying to do here, man. Look at this album as like an evolution in their sound. And I find that it's a little too proggy for my taste, yes, but I can still revisit it and I can see what they're doing. So, yeah, there we go. That's Technical Ecstasy.
think I've covered enough of it. The album art's really cool on this one too. I really like that, like, futurist, the robots fucking on an escalator, as Ozzy calls it. But I really love the, like, the colors and the vibe of it. It's very, like, bright white, very modern, and a cool album. Take it as it is. It's a step in their evolution. It's not them devolving. They're trying something new. And like I said before, this is a Tony Iommi album. So if you shit on it for not being riffy and cool enough, you're shitting on the Riff Lord himself. He loves this album. So I'll see you guys next month. Hope you're enjoying this journey so far. Sorry, I got a bit of a cold today. I didn't say that, but I kind of sound a little nasally. I apologize. So we'll be back next month with the final installment of the 70s, actually. Ozzy Fronted Sabbath is going to wind down here for us. But Never Say Die. I really like Never Say Die. So that'll be a fun episode. Send me your thoughts on the decade that was with Sabbath, too. The 70s, just in general. Maybe send me some top 10s, your favorite tracks of the 1970s. There's a lot of good ones. Probably the cream of the crop, really. But anyway, send me your thoughts at sabbathbloodypodcast@gmail.com or on the Twitter. We're really lighting up over there. It's having lots of fun talking to you guys on there at sabbathbloodypc. And bug blast all you.